It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And if he sounds a little bit distant, actually, I sound more distant than he does today. That Adam is live and well, but he is out of town, and we're freezing here. I think you're probably doing a better job of freezing than we are.
We are just above freezing here at a balmy 34 degrees.
I took the dog out this morning. It was 39, so there's just not enough difference to suit me. But we jumped right up to 44, and now it's up to 48. So, you know, you practically go out and get some sun time or something like that. Another 30 degrees would be perfect. Anyway, complain, right? So here we are, last show of the year, 2023, the last Saturday of the year, 2023, and we only have 1 month left before it'll be the last show of year nine for us, and starting in February, we'll start up right where we left off into year 10. So for everybody who thinks time flies, I can't argue with that one little bit. It doesn't seem possible, does it?
It sure does not. I can't believe that we are hitting 2024 and year 10 of our little business. That's crazy.
It is. And it was a good year nine for a lot of people, and I think our clients very largely had a really good year. I want to talk a little bit about that also when we get into the show a little bit. But meanwhile, I think a lot of people had high expectations for yesterday. They're hoping the market would show one more up day and maybe pop a couple of records that we're just really, really close to, and didn't do it, but we sure didn't do any damage yesterday either. The market was just fine, and the year closed with a bang with numbers that I'm going to find somewhere, somebody who says they predicted that this year would be this good, and I'm going to make them prove it if they say it, because I don't remember anybody saying it was going to be like this.
No way. I did predict an up year, but I was thinking if we could get, internally, I was thinking if we get 4%, I'll be really happy with this year. Just after last year, we just need a little bit of positive momentum. But, man, I have not talked to anyone who would have predicted what we actually saw this year. It was nothing short of incredible. The QQQ was up, almost 55%. Just insane numbers on some of these asset classes. It's let me run it down, because it's worth talking about. It's better than anyone expected, and also better than anyone felt like it was, because, well, I have heard people this month talking about, oh man, my 401k is looking good. Up until this month, I think people were still thinking that it was not a good year in the stock market. It's been the worst feeling good year we've ever seen. We've said that a number of times, and it closed out a little bit stronger. And so I think people are feeling a little bit better. But I think if you ask the average Joe on the street, what do you think about 2023? They would probably say, I'm glad it's over.
Well, they haven't had their fourth quarter mailings. For people who get quarterly reports, think about the last one that they got. It was September 30th report, and the third quarter was dismal this year. So that's the feeling they have been left with. Now, if you follow it day to day or get monthlies or whatever, you can keep up a little better, I guess. But I don't blame people for feeling like it was going to be a bad year. But I wouldn't have come up with this in my wildest dreams, that's for sure.
No way. I totally agree. So it was a little bit of a big day on Friday, but it really didn't ruin anything. We still saw another up week. For the year, the S&P was up over 26%, the Dow 16%, and I mentioned the NASDAQ QQQ ETF was up almost 55%. Mid and small caps really started to rally late in the year, so they were kind of late to the party, but they both managed to get an increase of over 16% on the year, which is more than we've seen out of those two asset classes in a long, long time. The S&P, there was a big performance gap between sectors. Technology led the way higher. That had a gain of over 56%, but communication services wasn't fine. That was up almost 53%. The next closest sector was consumer discretionary, and that was up almost 40%. But there were actually three sectors that were down on the year. You may be surprised to hear that, but utilities was down over 7% this year. The other two were down less than 1%, and that was consumer staples and energy. Internationally, it was also a good year. There was a couple of negatives. They were Hong Kong and China. Now, if you go, this, I am on the record as saying this in early this year, that Hong Kong and China were looking uninvestable, and that was proven correct. Hong Kong was down 14%. China was down 11% this year. But outside of that, it was a pretty good year across the globe. We saw Mexico as the best performing market that I could find. It had a gain of over 40%. Spain, Italy, and Brazil were all up over 30%. And then Japan, India, Germany, and France all had gains over 20%. The all world except U.S. index, that was up 15.7% in 2023. And the emerging market index was up 9%. But if you remove China from that emerging market index, it was up 17.6%, which actually beat out the all world index. So as a whole, emerging markets were a little bit shy of the all world index. But if you take out those two outliers, it was a really good year for emerging markets.
Which, by the way, you did.
I did. We use actually EMXC is the emerging markets fund that we use, and all that is the emerging markets without China. And so, yeah, it was a good year to be in that fund.
Yeah, when they started going goofy in China, and that thing popped up on our radar screen, Adam jumped on it and changed almost everybody over. I think. And lo and behold, it was a very good move in the rearview mirror, especially. I like being involved in them to a small degree. I like emerging markets, and nobody wants to get too heavy on them. But it's really nice when they're moving because they're volatile, and when they're on the way up, you can make a nice little killing.
Yeah, if you pull the chart for emerging markets, if I just mentioned, you'll see that it was actually flat on the year as early as basically early November, and then it did a huge rally in the last 2 months to end the year up 17.6%. So pretty incredible performance. And as you mentioned, quite volatile.
Yep. It was very interesting, especially when you look around the world at things that are happening. It's not just Ukraine. It's not just Israel. But Brazil made a change that no rational person would ever believe in. And yet look at their market. And there's been country after country that's kind of realizing that things are not what they should be out there, and they're actually taking some action. Now, that translates directly into 2024 for us, as most people aren't feeling too good about what's happening in the U.S. right now. So we'll see what this year brings. Certainly more volatility. All right, we got to take a quick break and pay a few bills. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have been kind of just enjoying the whole process here of a good year that was unexpected, and there's a lot more on that to come. But as usual, today we have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. I want to talk about one of the more negative aspects of the year we've just passed and the one we're going into. The average American got pretty much bitten by inflation over the last 3 or 4 years. And unfortunately, while the rate of inflation, the rate of increase, is down, the price levels are remaining stubbornly high. There are some things that do fall. Lumber, for instance, fell dramatically from its artificial peak. And some gasoline and that sort of thing. But most everything that you have to pay for out of your pocket this year is way higher. And it is showing with the average American. In fact, the average American savings rate fell under 4%. When was the last time in America that the citizens' savings rate was under 4%? What year? That one will tell you a lot, I believe. Anyway, anything you want to wrap up on the market, Adam?
Yeah, I actually had a little bit left. Commodities, I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Not the best year to be a commodities investor. The index was down over 6%. A lot of that loss can be traced back to natural gas. Lost a pretty staggering 64% of its value in 2023. Oil was also down, but a much more muted level, 5%. Gold actually had a good year, though. It gained 12.7%, while silver was down 1%. So a mixed bag in commodities, but, man, if you were thinking that you would get a rebound on natural gas, you probably did not make money on that trade. It was a wild year with natural gas.
You can trust me on that one.
Thanks to interest rates in the second half of the year, bonds was pretty decent gains in 2023. The bond market was up 5-6%. That gain came in the shorter duration bonds. 1-3 treasuries were 4%, while 20-year treasuries were up about 8%. So lots of movement in the yield curve. This all over it. It was still inverted, not quite as bad as it was, but we're still seeing that. And it's taking a long time to correct, and we'll see. It happens in early 2024. I wouldn't be surprised, but I think I honestly, it could go either way. I really don't know.
We're getting a little bit of cutting out on your signal. If you can find one place where it doesn't, it would be helpful.
Sorry about that. Let me know if that's any better.
Right now, you're real good.
Okay, I won't move.
Okay.
Yeah, going into 2024, I'm guessing that people will feel just about as apprehensive as they did throughout 2023. I don't blame you one bit. There's still basically all the same worries. We've got, and then you add on top of that, we're going into a presidential election year, and so that's going to make people at least feel much more apprehensive. But the fact is, election years are actually the second best year of the four-year election cycle, and that's second only to the first year of the election cycle, which will be in 2025. So what we're looking at is a pretty good setup to continue the bull market in 2024 and 2025, and the fact that the market is still pretty new relative to average bull markets would lead me to believe there's a decent chance that we could see a good couple of years coming up.
Yeah, and one of the best pieces of news out there is that some of the big moves that came in the market this year, the reason the indices are so high, came in the big seven stocks, and it's just starting to spread out now, where the, as you said, the smaller and the medium and even the smaller of the large are all starting to show some strength, which means this market could have a long ways up to run yet. Long ways.
It really could. And also, I wanted to note that this year was not without events that could have brought down the market. We saw the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, the seizure and sale of First Republic Bank to J.P. Morgan. We had the Hollywood actor and writer strike. We had the highest interest rates since 2008. We had the highest mortgage rates in 20 years. We saw a strike at the big three automakers. We saw Kevin McCarthy removed as the House Speaker. The brutal attack of innocent Israelis by Hamas and a continuing war in Ukraine and the problems in China. I mean, this year was filled with reasons the market could go down, and look what happened. So I know it's a cliche that the market climbs a wall of worry, but if this isn't a good example, I don't know what is.
Well, the whole economy was helped along by the Taylor Swift concert series. Which
I guess we can all thank Taylor for this great year.
Seriously, she actually had an impact on the economy. It was that big. It's quite incredible that one person could do something like that. Like her or not, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. But people spent some money. And let's face it, we got a 70% consumer-driven economy. And who keeps the thing going but us, all of us?
Absolutely. I have to like it, or else my daughter would disown me.
That's exactly right. At least you can't say anything in public.
Exactly.
It's a phenomenal thing that's happening, and it happens once in a while in music. I'm sure the Beatles had an impact that was at least similar, maybe more, back in their days. So it's been too long ago. I don't remember enough. But anyway, there's a lot of reasons that things could go wrong, and there's a lot of reasons that things could go well. That's no different than I would sit here on the last show of any given year and say, looking forward, there's just a lot of uncertainty. But you got to remember, people, that long run, if you trust American business people to make money, they're going to figure it out. The companies will do well. If the earnings do well, the market does well. It's hard sometimes to keep the faith, but it really pays off. And I don't think there's been a better example of that anywhere for quite some time than what just happened. Keep the faith,
yeah,
I say.
No doubt about it.
Here's something interesting. Schwab has a program that they call the Personal Choice Retirement Account, PCRAs. Now, Schwab's huge, as everybody knows, and they custody a lot of money, including a lot of 401k plans, a lot of IRAs, and so on. If you're an individual 401k type, like Adam is and I am, that's one thing. But also, if you have your company 401k account at Schwab, you can actually add on a PCRA amendment to it, where you can then hire people like us to manage funds for you. And we have done that in the past. And then when the people retire, it just switches over to their own IRA. But Schwab did a survey of their quarter three results for all of the PCRA accounts. And they lost an average of 9.2% in the third quarter. So I was just wondering how that compares to what our clients did in the third quarter. And as I recall, most of them came out having gone down much less than that. Is my recollection good, Adam?
Yes, based on unaudited results, I would say generally you are correct.
Okay, and it's very important for people to remember that making money in an upmarket is a slam dunk. The key to long-term success is to lose less than your next-door neighbor did during the downtimes. So if you can get your losses minimized, and I know a lot of what we did this year paid off through that third quarter because we got the opportunity handed to us basically by the Federal Reserve to be able to invest the funds that we didn't want as volatile at a much nicer rate of return. And these money market rates in the 5 range and that sort of thing have really, really helped us and most of our clients. So if you have a little guidance in those areas, there are often ways that you can do this. But the simplest example I've ever seen, and I use it all the time, it's twice as hard to make money as it is to lose money. For instance, start with $100. Year one, you lose half of it, 50%. Now what do you got? $50. Year two, you make 50%. 50% of $50 is $25. So now you're up to $75. In order to get your 50% back, your $50 would have to earn 100%. It is literally twice as hard to make money as it is to lose money. What does that lead to? It leads to Dave Ramsey. Never one to avoid an argument, Dave Ramsey. I know a lot of people out there really like him. Heck, I really like him. I don't always agree with him. And I definitely admire what he's done with his own business. But he stepped in it recently with an article that he said the safe withdrawal rate, we generally stick to the tried and true 4% rate. He says that's ridiculous, it's too conservative. And the real, honest to goodness, safe withdrawal rate is actually 8%. Now, you got any instant read on that one, Adam?
I saw this.
I'm not surprised. Dave.
I disagree with him about just about everything when it comes to investing. But when it comes to structuring your lifestyle, I think he does excellent work. So just take it for what it's worth.
That's exactly the right way to look at it, too. He has made a name out of a single slogan, as some people are wont to do. I'm debt-free. And I think if everybody in the country paid attention to that, it doesn't have to be today, it doesn't have to be tomorrow, and there is good debt and there's bad debt. Good debt puts a roof over your head. So if you need a mortgage in order to buy a house and the house is working for you two ways, keeping you warm and sheltered and probably appreciating. I don't mind some debt on that one at all. But
no.
there's more to this, and we'll have to bring it back right after the break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have lines open, 904-222-8255. And our question today is, what was the last year when Americans dropped their savings rate to less than 4% as they did in 2023? That's just the year. And right back into this, Dave Ramsey's 8%. I want to talk about this a little bit. Let's look at some of his assumptions. He says, if you're making 12% in good mutual funds and the S&P is averaging 11.8, and if inflation for the last 80 years is 4%, if you make 12 and you need to leave 4 in there for average inflation, that leaves you 8. So I'm perfectly comfortable drawing 8. Well, there's couple little mathematical quirks in that one of which I was just explaining about having to make twice back what you lose just to break even. And it's not, when you do the math on this, even if you just think about it and don't put pen to paper, it does not mean that you're going to make 12% every year. It does not mean inflation is going to return to a 4% level every year. And if you figure in the sort of, I don't know, it's a nerd problem, I guess I'd call it, called sequence of returns, you're going to find out that if you get into this program and you draw 8% on a bad year, for instance, if you did that in 2022, you would have to make an unbelievable amount of money to get that back, and instead you're drawing another 8% the next year. You're in trouble right out of the chute. Comments, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much research on this topic and so many studies, and for him to just come out and say that's all wrong and you can be careless with your money like that, it's really a disservice to all the people he's helped get debt free. I don't understand why he would go that route.
No, I think it's very unfiduciary-like.
That's my opinion. I would agree with that.
And if anybody comes to us and starts asking us about how much they can take out, you're going to hear a much more traditional report. Now, he contends that the 4% rule is too depressing. Well, hey, boys and girls, I don't care if it's depressing or not. Is it realistic? There's nothing more depressing than running out of money before you run out of life. And that's what this plan is going to lead to.
Retirement planning isn't, you don't do it to have fun. You do it because it's a serious and much needed thing that you need to do in your life if you're going to have any kind of retirement that lasts 30 years. That's why we do it, not to feel good. I don't know. It's just a weird comment.
If you love this kind of stuff like we do, it is fun to do, but the reason it's fun to do is because we figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work statistically and with probabilities that we can live with, like really big ones. The sooner you start this stuff, the sooner people are going to adapt their behavior to something that will hopefully serve them for a lifetime. As you said, possibly a very long lifetime with 30 years or so in retirement. And I see this whole controversy, the 8% withdrawal rate controversy, as it just flashes warning signs from everything that we've ever thought, learned, and said, and watched, and everything else. So if you're a big Ramsey fan, and you start hearing that and say, well, I can do that, and I hate to say we told you so, but we at least advised you to be careful, and that's close enough for me. All right, now speaking of retirement, let's move on to the required minimum distributions. We have been reporting right along that if you were caught in the, as I call it, the 1950 trap, and you started taking distributions, that's fine. But with the new Secure 2.0, the 1951 people were given a reprieve and all these laws get passed at the wrong time late in the year, and IRS was indicating that if this were your first year that you were required to take it, that you wouldn't have to after all. The law was written in a flawed manner, and they're issuing some corrections, which are still not signed into law, but the IRS did issue some guidelines. And it turns out, if you are a 72-year-old who started taking RMDs this year early, you are now given extra time if you would like to pay them back as if it never happened. So in the new release, you're now granted until, I think it was October, and you got until October to repay all that money, and you don't have to claim it as taxable income. So if you did it solely because the law said you had to do it, not because you needed it to live on, you do have that reprieve, and you have time to do something about it. So something everybody should know, particularly important if you were born in 1951. And for if 6 months and 4 days, I would have been. But I got in that little rabbit hole with a bunch of our friends who were in 1950, and we cannot get around this. So that's like at least what they did when they changed the life expectancy tables. They did grant us some relief from that. And that's a good thing. So nothing's all bad, right? All right, Secure 2.0 is, they have been looking for something. This is another one I was complaining about a few weeks ago. They were looking for something to attach it to that was a must pass. Well, they didn't even pass their must pass stuff. Talk about dysfunctional. This is setting records every day in D.C. for dysfunctional government. This will pass, but it won't pass until they get back and take care of some other things, like another pending shutdown. There's always something that's more important than taking care of individuals and the retirements and all that. It gets very, very tiresome. But we'll let you know as it goes along where it stands. And right now, 2.0 is still more or less a figment of people's imagination, but it will happen. One more note on that, something that I think I've misled people on. When the age goes from the new 73 to 75 for your RMDs, that does not take effect until the year 2033. So if you turn 75 in 2022, I have to look that up and see. I think you already will have had to start. So it's a ways out. We'll know a lot more about it when the regulations are published, and we can tell you exactly who's affected by this thing. But if you're on the cusp right now and you think, oh, man, just a little bit more, and I can jump that up to age 75, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Yeah, that's the bad news. Good news is 73 is better than 72. All right?
This is true. We'll take any relief we can get.
We certainly will, and every time we can get it. All right, another one that we've talked about on and off for a long time. I-bond interest rates. Many of you probably know that every May and November, I-bond interest rates are set again for the six-month period going in there. Well, the new ones are out, and once again, they're down, of course. Interest rates peaked, and you're not going to get these anymore. Remember, I think the number was 9.62. I don't remember when they had the big rush a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was from May 1 to October 30th of 2022. You got 9.62. But again, that's only what happened for 6 months. So then it drops down to 6.48 for year two and 3.38 for year three. Now, the problem with these I-bonds catches up with you during the falling rates. So in my opinion, you'd be better off if you've got I-bonds and they're over a year old, which they have to be to get rid of them, and you will pay a three-month interest penalty on them. So you might want to look along the way, and when interest rates drop one more time, then you wait 3 months and sell it. But it might be time to start thinking longer term on some of your corporate bonds or treasuries. But I think, and I think, Adam, you probably agree with me because I think I got this from you, bond funds are starting to look more interesting now. Agree with that?
Definitely. And there's a really good reason for that. I know that 5% sounds like a great return, but most of those 5% money markets and other ways of getting that type of interest are not guaranteed. They're floating rates. So as interest rates come down, you're going to see those money market funds start to drop in their payouts, and that is not going to benefit you. So bond funds, on the other hand, have the potential to appreciate in value as interest rates come down. So yes, I am definitely looking at adding corporate bond funds back into our lineup in 2024.
And bonds had a pretty darn strong return, especially in the later part of this year. And I think that's going forward. You agree with me?
Yes, I do think that'll be the case. The what we saw in 2022 was pretty unprecedented. We were seeing the 3-year return on bonds around -5 at one point. That's not something that I've ever seen before, and I don't expect that is something we will see again anytime soon.
It is a classic study, however, in the term safety. You got to be careful when you're fleeing to safety that what you're fleeing to isn't sinking. That I do think that period of time is so unusual that it's very unlikely that I will ever see it, and I think it's largely unlikely that Adam will ever see that again. They are generally a lot less volatile than stocks, but safe is not a word that you use without some kind of a little quotation on it that says maybe or something like that, and just a little codicil, be a little careful. All right, I want to come back and talk about one of my favorite economists who wrote a great piece. I'll let you know right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm just sitting here chuckling to myself because, coincidentally, the station just ran a commercial by, what's his name? Oh, yeah, Dave Ramsey. He must have had his ears ringing or something like that. Anyway. Again, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the question of the week out there is, what was the last year in which the savings rate of Americans dropped under 4%? We know that savings are really, really taking a hurt right now. If you look at the credit card debt, it rose above $1 trillion and it never looked back. Also, there's a lot of car loans that are underwater now, meaning simply that the car isn't worth what the loan that they carry is on it. And when you try to upgrade that car, you're not going to be able to if it's far enough underwater, because you have to finance your debt and your new car, and it's getting very dangerous out there. And the only way to fix this, basically, aside from driving your car so the wheels fall off, is very simply to get interest rates down. And that's part of the problem that Stephen Moore, I know a lot of you are familiar with the economist Stephen Moore, he's one of my personal favorites. He's got a great presentation, and more so than anything, he agrees with me, which means he's right. My definition. He would probably say that I agree with him, so he's right.
But that's a widely accepted definition, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, the underwater car loan problem is indicative of a lot of other things that are going on. And he blames in an article out of Hot Air, he blames the Phillips curve. The article is entitled "The Tyranny of the Phillips Curve." I'm going to read you the first sentence. Repeat after me, class. Growth does not cause inflation. Write it on the blackboard 100 times. Growth and inflation is the definition of the Phillips curve, which is an old Keynesian model that people just can't seem to get over. They think, well, if things are too good, then you're going to have problem after problem after problem, that growth is incompatible with having a steady inflation rate. And this was in place for a long, long time. And then the 70s came along, and a strange thing happen. It was so strange during the years of Carter that we had to give it a new name. So somebody came up with the word stagflation, and it's pretty easy to understand. Inflation was not caused by growth because there was no growth. Therefore, the Phillips curve was disproven, but not forgotten. And in the halls of the hallowed Keynesian economics classes, it is still there. And unfortunately, those are the people who are now with the Federal Reserve. So they are pursuing the impossible right now. And that is to, they think, kibosh inflation by making sure there is no growth. And it is not going to work any better now than it ever has. There's a lot of reasons why this should have gone the other way, and it hasn't. Speaking of economists, I recommended the book last week for Art Laffer, and he's another good one that I believe in. He says, if the economy produces more apples, the price of apples goes down. It doesn't go up. The reason the pro-growth movement is called supply-side economics is that the goal of any well-run economy should be to increase the production and supply of goods and services. To which I respond, duh, it has been tried. It works. If the Fed would understand that they'd be smarter to listen to these guys than to the old Keynesians, then a lot of this would go away. But as it looks right now, I believe what's going to happen this year, and I can't say for sure, but there's going to be a problem, I think, with getting that inflation rate down where they want it without having to put us into a recession. So I know they're looking at it. I don't know if they can react fast enough. We do have a phone call. I don't know who it is. Good morning, caller.
Yes. Who? Oh, I got right through.
Yeah, who
right
is?
Through without an intermediary. Happy New Year. My name is Mike.
Okay, hi Mike. What's happening?
Hi, Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you.
All right. Very quick question,
yeah.
And I'll make it non-specific in case you can't answer specifically. I mentioned about a year ago that I had a stock, an oil company, that was involved. They were in a country that was an aggressor in Eastern Europe. So the SEC, or the New York Stock Exchange, took it off the market. I guess the direct...
Something happened.
It is there as a loss, but it doesn't declare it as a loss. In other words, it doesn't put it for 1099 purposes.
Ooh.
Am I in limbo? Are those of us in that situation, in your opinion, in limbo where, you know, I'm chomping at the bit to declare it a loss because it is a loss at the moment.
Well, I'm going to give you...
brokerage...
I'll give you an opinion.
Go ahead.
Call a CPA.
Okay.
That has wandered into the column of tax advice, and we are not qualified to give tax advice. Tax planning we do. We know a lot of the rules. But I can't give you advice on that. It's definitely in the realm of either a tax attorney or a CPA. And I would have to refer you to somebody like that. But
no,
it sure,
that.
I mean, it seems like you've got a leg to stand on. I just don't know.
Understood.
Yeah. Okay.
Where you might help me, though, next year is because I am that 72,
uh-huh.
And we'll have to start taking the deferred comp.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said once that if I make a draft of what my taxes are likely to be, you might tell me if I'm going to fall into like that dreaded quarterly payment, which I never fully understood, situation, and you might be able to give me some advice that way.
We can guide you through that, but again, anything that we would come up with, I'd want you to run past the CPA. But you can actually do that using TurboTax also, and they'll... You can stick that in there. You don't have to use it to file, but you can go in and put your numbers in and then do your what if I take this amount, and it would come back as if you were to file it, and it would probably recommend one way or the other what to do about the quarterlies. But, yeah, we can help you walk through the process and see what range you're going to be in. The problem with the quarterlies is very simple. You have to match the money you put into IRS with the quarter in which the money is earned within certain boundaries. But some things like
90%.
It's something. Yeah, that's the safe harbor stuff. But the other thing that you need to know, and you can look this up on the IRS website, things like required minimum distributions are generally credited as if they all came out on December 31st of the year, which means timing is irrelevant for purposes of quarterlies. But there again, that you got to dig into the taxes and the law and then get an opinion that is far more valuable than ours because somebody's licensed to give it to you.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. I always thought that the reason that makes this difficult is you really don't know what your taxes are going to be or what to
That's
put
right.
on your form. Because I've been doing it for 35 years after they wouldn't allow me to take the full deduction. They told me wrong about what the value of a 55 Chevy was. But but my point is that by the time you got an idea of what your taxes are, like I do in March or April, I think you've already missed a quarterly payment that you could be penalized for.
Oh, well, the first one is technically due on April 15th with your last year's, so
yeah.
You got that long.
Okay.
But
remember,
though, that you can get around that. If I don't know if you can get around all of it, but the safe harbor rule says if you pay in 110% of last year or 100% of this year's liability, then you have different rules, and that helps. So again, I know
liability.
What to do.
I always got a refund. I'm just afraid that according to the IRS table, this $14,400 addition might put me over.
You can
a refund. Go ahead.
You can have taxes withheld from that and avoid the problem too, as it's paid out.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yep.
When they pay out that $14,400, you could have taxes taken out?
Yeah, tell them you want 25% or whatever, 22% or whatever it is that your rate is withheld, and you get the net, and then it goes into credit right as it's paid at your IRS.
Oh, so, okay.
There you go.
Good.
Something practical.
So in other words, like your pension or anything else, Social Security,
you can do it.
Withhold.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
All right.
You want to take a quick shot at the trivia?
Quick shot, 2008.
You got it. Bingo. It was the last time things were this bad was in 2008. It's a very logical question, and you nailed it, absolutely.
I think in September or October it was 3.9. But in any case, thank you for that, gentlemen.
Sure.
Always a great show. I wish you and your families Happy New Year.
Thank you. I'll put you on hold, and Tom can get your name
thank
and address.
You.
Okay, thank you. Happy New
Take
Year.
Take care.
Yeah, that wonderfully forgettable year, 2008. And right now, I think it's actually gone negative now. Adam, are you on? No, he's not. Okay. Thanks, Adam. Too late now to bother trying to get back in, but on behalf of both of us, we wish everybody a safe and happy and very prosperous New Year. Thanks for listening. Keep doing that. Tell your friends. Go to our website. There's always some interesting blogs, and all of the shows that we've done throughout the year are available on the podcast. It can direct you there, too. So go to VanWeFinancial.com. You can always set up an appointment on the website to see us, and the first hour is always free. So let's make next year a good one. A lot of people are focusing on finances next year. That's a good thing. Have a good one. This is the VanWee Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOP Jacksonville 101.1 FM W26